This message is The God Who Fights For Us from April 16. We all face them, strongholds with a stronghold on our lives, roadblocks to our joy, obstacles in our marriages, fortresses of fear that blocking us from peace. How can we bring down these walls that keep us from the future God promises? Remember the story of Joshua and the Battle of Jericho? Those were some formidable foes, big barriers. Max Lucado says the book of Joshua is in the Bible to remind us of one thing: God fights for us. We can overcome because He has already overcome. We were not made to stand in the shadow of our walls and quake. We were made to stand on top of Jericho's rubble and conquer. We win because God's already won. For 7 years, they were virtually untouchable. 7 nations conquered, at least 31 kings defeated, approximately 10,000 square miles of choice property claimed. 7 years of unbridled success. They were outnumbered, but not overpowered, under-equipped, but not overwhelmed. They were the unlikely but unquestionable conquerors of some of the most barbaric armies in history. Had the campaign been a prize fight, that referee would have called it in the first round. The Hebrew people were unstoppable. That hadn't always been. The Bible doesn't gloss over the checkered history of God's chosen people. Abraham had too many wives. Jacob told too many lies. Esau sold his birthright. Joseph's brothers sold Joseph. 4 centuries of Egyptian bondage were followed by 40 years of wilderness wandering, then later 70 years of Babylonian detention. The Hebrew people built 2 temples only to lose them. They were given the Ark of the Covenant only to lose it. Babylonia built her cities. Greece flexed her muscles. Rome stretched her empire. And Israel? In the schoolroom of ancient society, she was the kid with the black eye, bullied, beat up. Except for those 7 years, the glory days of Israel. On the timeline of your Bible, this era glistens between the difficult days of Exodus and the dark days of the Judges. Moses had just died, and the Hebrews were beginning their 5th decade as Bedouin in the Badlands. Sometime around 1400 BC, God spoke. Joshua listened, and the glory days began. The Jordan River opened up, the Jericho walls fell down, the sun stood still, and the kings of Canaan were forced into early retirement. Evil was booted, hope rebooted, and by the end of the campaign, the homeless wanderers became hope-filled homesteaders. A nation of shepherds began to quarry a future out of the Canaanite hills. They built farms and villages and vineyards. The accomplishments were so complete that the historian wrote in Joshua 21, verses 43 to 45, "So the Lord gave to Israel all the land He had sworn to give their ancestors, and they took possession of it and settled there. And the Lord gave them rest on every side, just as He had solemnly promised their ancestors. None of their enemies could stand against them, for the Lord helped them conquer all their enemies. Not a single one of all the good promises the Lord had given to the family of Israel was left unfulfilled. Everything He had spoken came true." What sweeping statements. The Lord gave all the land. The Lord gave them rest. Not a man of all their enemies stood against them. All came to pass. Winter chill gave way to springtime thaw, and a new season was born. John MacArthur comments, "Joshua 21:43-45 sums up God's fulfillment of His covenant promise to give Abraham's people the land. God also kept his word in giving the people rest. In a valid sense, the Canaanites were in check under military conquest, as God had pledged, not posing an immediate threat. Every enemy had been driven out, however, leaving some to stir up trouble later. And J. Vernon McGee adds, the children of Israel now possess the land of Canaan. But that was only a small segment of the land God had promised them. If they are to get any more land, they will have to go and possess it. The rule still stands that every place their feet stand upon will be theirs. That which the Israelites possess now, however, is free from the enemy, and they can enter into rest. The rest for us today is the rest of redemption. It is the rest that we desperately need. We live in an age of tension. There are many pressures. And if there's one thing that the average Christian needs, it's to enter into the rest that God has provided. Max again. Perhaps you need a new season as well. You don't need to cross the Jordan River, but you do need to get through the week. You aren't facing Jericho, but you're facing rejection or heartache. Canaanites don't stalk you, but disease and discouragement, danger, rampant. You wonder if you have what it takes to face tomorrow. You can relate to that deflated little fellow I saw in an airport terminal. He and his family were on summer vacation. At least that's what I Sherlocked from the way they were dressed. Flip-flops and baseball caps and straw hats. They were beach-bound for a week of sand and sun. Everything about the dad's expression said, "Hurry up! We have to run if we're going to make the connection." The concourse was his football field, the departure gate his end zone. He was determined to score a touchdown. Can the little fellow keep up, I wondered? Mom could. She matched her husband's stride for stride. The big brothers could. They hitched their backpacks higher and they leaned forward into the draft of their parents. But the little guy, he was 5 years old, 6 at most. His face was resolved, but his legs were so short. It didn't help matters that he was dragging a pint-sized Mickey Mouse carry-on bag, nor did it help that the entire civilized world was jammed into the airport. He tried to match his parents' pace, but he just couldn't. And so he stopped. Right in the middle of the mayhem, he gave up. He plopped his bag on the floor, sat on top of it, and shouted in the direction of his disappearing family, "I can't keep up!" Can you relate? Sometimes the challenge is just too much. You want to keep up. You try. It's not that you don't. You just run out of fight. Life has the way of taking the life out of us. The book of Joshua is in the Bible for such seasons. We're going to go through it over the next weeks. It dares us to believe our best days are ahead of us. God has a promised land for each of us to take. The promised land was the third stop on the Hebrews' iconic itinerary. Their pilgrimage began in Egypt, continued through the wilderness, and concluded in Canaan. Each land represented a different condition of life. Geography is theology. In Egypt, the Hebrews were enslaved to Pharaoh. In the wilderness, they were free from Pharaoh, but still enslaved in fear. They refused to enter the promised land and languished in the desert. Only in Canaan did they discover victory. Egypt, the wilderness, and Canaan. Slaves to Pharaoh, slaves to fear, and finally, people of the promise. We too have traveled this itinerary. Egypt represents our days before salvation. We were in bondage to sin. We wore the leg irons of guilt and death. But then came our deliverer, Jesus Christ. By his grace, in his power, we crossed the Red Sea. He liberated us from the old life and offered a brand new life in Canaan. Our promised land isn't a physical territory, it's a spiritual reality. It's not real estate, but a real state of heart and mind. A promised land in which we are more than conquerors through Christ who loved us, Romans 8:37. A life in which we do not lose heart, 2 Corinthians 4:16. A life in which Christ's love has the first and last word in everything we do, 2 Corinthians 5:14. A life in which we are exceedingly joyful in all our tribulations, 2 Corinthians 7:4. A life in which we are anxious for nothing, Philippians 4:6. In which we are praying always, Ephesians 6:18. In which we do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him, Colossians 3:17. Canaan is a life defined by grace, refined by challenge, aligned with a heavenly call. In God's plan, in God's land, we win more often than we lose. Forgive as quickly as we're offended. Give as abundantly as we receive. We serve out of our giftedness, and we delight in our assignments. We may stumble, but we don't collapse. We may struggle, but we defy despair. We boast only in Christ, trust only in God, lean wholly on his power. We enjoy abundant fruit, increasing faith. Canaan symbolizes the victory we can have today. In spite of what the hymn suggests, to Canaan's land I'm on my way, where the soul of man never dies. Canaan is not a metaphor for heaven. The idea is beautiful, but the symbolism just doesn't work. Heaven will have no enemies. Canaan had at least 7 enemy nations. Heaven will have no battles. Joshua and his men fought at least 31. Heaven will be free of stumbles and struggles. Joshua's men weren't. They stumbled and struggled, but their victories far outweighed their defeats. So Canaan then does not represent the life to come. Canaan represents the life we can have right now. God invites us to enter Canaan. There's only one condition. We must turn our backs on the wilderness. It's the crossing moment. Just as Canaan represents the victorious Christian life, the wilderness represents the defeated Christian life. In the desert, the Hebrew people were liberated from Egyptian bondage, but you wouldn't have known it by listening to them. Just 3 days into their freedom, the people complained against Moses, saying, "What shall we drink?" Exodus 15:24. A few more days passed, and the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. "Oh, that we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, for you have brought us out into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger." Exodus 16:2 and 3. The people contended with Moses. The people complained against Moses. They inhaled anxiety like oxygen. They bellyached to the point that Moses prayed, "What shall I do with these people? They are almost ready to stone me." How did the Hebrews descend to this point? It wasn't for the lack of miracles. They saw God's power in high definition. They watched locusts gobble crops, boils devour skin, flies buzz through Pharaoh's court. God turned the chest-thumping Egyptians into shark bait right before the Hebrews' eyes. But when God called them to cross over into Canaan, the 12 spies returned, and all but 2 said the mission was impossible. The giants were too big for them. "We were like grasshoppers," they said. "We were tiny, tiny bugs. They will squash us." So God gave them time to think it over. He put the entire nation in timeout for nearly 40 years. They walked in circles. They ate the same food every day. Life was an endless routine of the same rocks and lizards and snakes. Victories were scarce. Progress was slow. They were saved, but not strong. Redeemed, but not released. Saved from Pharaoh, but stuck in the desert. Redeemed, but locked in a routine that was monotonous, dull, ho-hum, humdrum. 4 decades of tedium. Sure sounds miserable. It might sound familiar. From his book, Glory Days, Max shares this illustration. I sat across from lunch today from a man in midlife misery. He described his life with words like stuck and rut and stalled out. He's a Christian. He can tell you the day he escaped Egypt, but he can't tell you the last time he defeated a temptation or experienced an answered prayer. 20 years into his faith, he fights the same battles he was fighting the day he came to Christ. He's out of Egypt, but Egypt's not out of him. He didn't say the words, but I could sense the sentiment. I thought the Christian life would be better than this. He feels disengaged, discouraged. It's as if the door to spiritual growth has a lock and everybody has a key but him. He doesn't know whom to blame, himself or the church, God. He doesn't know what to do. Change congregations, change Bible translations, slow down and reflect, get busier work. My friend is not alone in the wilderness. The Reveal Research Projects went on a search for Joshuas. Beginning in 2007, they surveyed the members of more than 1,000 churches. They wanted to determine the percentage of churchgoers who were actually propelled by their faith to love God and love others with their whole hearts. How many Christians would describe their days as glory days? Their findings came out in 2012. The answer? 11%. Only 11%. That's nearly 9 out of 10 believers. In other words, 90% are languishing in the wilderness. Saved? Yes. Empowered? No. They waste away in the worst of ways in the land of in-between, out of Egypt, but not yet in Canaan. 11%. If a high school graduated only 11% of its students, or if a hospital healed only 11% of its patients, if a baseball team won only 11% of its games, if a home builder completed only 11% of his projects, wouldn't changes be made? The church has a serious deficiency. We also have a wonderful opportunity. According to the global religious research landscape, about 2.2 billion people on this planet call themselves Christians. That's approximately 1/3 of the world's population. If the survey's any indication, about 2 billion of these Christians are chugging along on a fraction of their horsepower. Such sluggishness can only lead to weak churches, half-hearted ministries. What would happen if they got a tune-up? How would the world be different if 2 billion people came out of the wilderness? How much joy would be unleashed into the atmosphere? How much wisdom would be quarried and shared? How many marriages would be saved? How many wars would be prevented? How much hunger would be eliminated? How many orphanages would be built? In fact, how many orphanages would we even need? If every Christian began to live the promised land life, how would the world be different? If you began to live the promised land life, how would you be different? Do you ever sense a disconnect between the promises of the Bible and the reality of your life? Jesus offers abundant joy, yet you may live with oppressive grief. The epistles speak of grace. You shoulder such guilt. We are more than conquerors, yet commonly conquered by temptations or weakness. We get caught in the land between Egypt and Canaan. Think about the Christian you want to be. What qualities do you want to have? More compassion, more conviction, more courage? What attitudes do you want to discontinue? Greed, guilt, endless negativity, a critical spirit? Here's the good news. You can. With God's help, you can close the gap between the person you are and the person you want to be. Indeed, the person God made you to be. You can live from glory to glory. The walls of Jericho are already condemned. The giants are already on the run. The deed to your new life in Canaan has already been signed. It just falls to you to possess the land. Joshua and his men did this. They went from dry land to the promised land, from manna to feasts, from arid deserts to fertile fields. They inherited their inheritance. Their epitaph deserves a second reading. So the Lord gave to Israel all the land of which he had sworn to give to their fathers. And they took possession of it and dwelt in it. The Lord gave them rest all around, according to all that he had sworn to their fathers. And not a man of all their enemies stood against them. The Lord delivered all their enemies into their hand. Not a word failed of any good thing which the Lord had spoken to the house of Israel. All came to pass. Let's personalize that promise. Put your name in the blanks. The Lord gave to you all the life he had sworn to give, and you took possession of it and dwelt in it. The Lord gave you rest all around, and not an enemy stood, not a word failed of any good thing which the Lord had spoken to you. All came to pass. This is God's vision for your life, for mine. Imagine the thought. You are full throttle, you as you were intended, you as victor over the Jerichos and giants, you and your promised land life. It's yours for the taking. Expect to be challenged. The enemy won't go down without a fight. But expect great progress. Life is different on the west side of the Jordan. Breakthroughs outnumber breakdowns. God's promises outweigh personal problems. Victory becomes, dare we imagine, a way of life. Isn't it time for you to change your mailing address from the wilderness to the promised land? Your glory days await you. Ready to march? Selah.